Dr. Laura Hannes-Webb, author of The Gift of ADHD, and today I get to talk with Dr. Bernie Siegel, who is the legendary surgeon known for being the author of Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and lots of other books. And today I get to talk to him about his latest book, which is called The Art of Healing, Uncovering Your Inner Wisdom and Potential for Self-Healing. I mean, even the title really just says so much. So welcome, Dr. Siegel.
Thank you very much.
Well, one of the reasons I was so interested to talk with you in our emails going back and forth, you had sent me an email that just said simply, heal myself is the only way.
Right.
And that really caught my attention because I'm the editor of a magazine called Heal Myself. So tell me what that meant to you.
Well, two things. One, I'm often, with a sense of humor, saying that I have started a new religion called Undo. And the symbols are a penny, water, and a Band-Aid. Now, you'd say, why those things? Because a penny gives us the message. Liberty, you know, the freedom to be who we are, and God we trust. Because I always say the Creator has built into us, you know, that's why the heal myself, has built into us survival mechanisms. How does a bacteria overcome antibiotics? It alters its genes and becomes resistant, you know, or a tree, you cut off a branch, but it doesn't let the sap leak out and die. And water also, then I'll get to the Band-Aid and the healing, but the water also defies the laws of physics. The only liquid which, when frozen, becomes less dense and floats is water. When it becomes ice, what do you notice? Ice cubes at the top of the glass. They're not at the bottom. But everything else, because I was always thinking recently of all these volcanoes, you know, when the lava's nice and hot, it runs. When it cools, it becomes a rock that would sink in the hot lava. And yet the water is doing it in reverse. And again, it shows to me the wisdom of creation. You know, as the ice is melting, we're seeing all the problems we get into. And then when you have a patient, see, who gets well when not supposed to, they don't get credit. The doctor doesn't say, well, you're really something. Look what you did for yourself. I thought you were going to die and you got better. They say you had a spontaneous remission. Okay? Or that was miraculous. I don't know how it happened. But your magazine isn't entitled Spontaneous Remission Magazine. It's Heal Myself. Say.
Right.
And in Solzhenitsyn's book, Cancer Ward, because that's why my Band-Aid, let me mention before I get to the book. I mean, I knew that we're healing. I say to people, you cut yourself, what do? You put a Band-Aid over it, and a week later, you're okay. You know, you don't panic. You don't have to run to the doctor. You know it's built into you. And we have to, again, accept and understand that. But the key is, how do you turn those mechanisms on?
Right.
So your life, well, the other side of the coin, Monday morning, more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. So you see how your life reflects in your health. And in Solzhenitsyn's book, Cancer Ward, one of the men comes into the ward, says, I found a book in the library. They're in the hospital. He says, look, it says here there are cases of self-induced healing, not recovery through treatment, but actual healing. See? And it was as though a rainbow-colored butterfly fluttered out of the great open book, and they all held up their foreheads and cheeks for its healing touch as it flew past. When I read that, I knew Solzhenitsyn and I are coming from the same place, because he lived with cancer. And he understands that it isn't luck or an accident, or it's self-induced. See, you could call your magazine that, Self-Induced Healing Magazine, because it's coming that way.
Right.
And the other symbol, you see, which you should say to your readers, is why did he pick a rainbow-colored butterfly? The rainbow is your life in order, the harmony, the rhythm. And every color has meaning, and I mean that literally, in our symbols. Even if you just think, why do we have a red light when you have to stop. And a green light is go. Those colors mean something to the people. It's not an accident when they're chosen. And so the butterfly is also the symbol of transformation. And
wow.
So when you transform your life, find rhythm and harmony, then your body gets what I call a live message, and wonderful things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And doctors don't ask people. That's the sad part. I learned when I began to meet patients I thought were dead. I mean that literally. Because they were not coming back to the office. You know, they had been quite sick, but they don't show up in the office. You assume, oh, they died.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd be out lecturing, and there they were sitting in the audience.
Oh,
and I'd always go down off the stage and say, hey, what's happened? What, you know? And I'd listen to them, and they all had a story about how they transformed their life. And sometimes it was very simple and humorous almost.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when you decide to, two guys who were supposed to be dead in a short time, a few months, one went to Colorado to live in the mountains because he wanted to die in the beautiful mountains.
Mm-hmm.
The other, his wife insisted that the last few months of his life, he buy a house on the ocean down in Miami, Florida area, and sit and meditate and look out at the ocean and just enjoy the last few months. The one in Florida lived for 5.5 years,
mm-hmm.
and he became a good friend of mine because I met him when I was down there speaking.
Uh-huh.
The fellow who went to Colorado, I told the family before they left, call me when he dies. I'll be out for the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
No call for 12 months. I called them. I was so mad at them for ignoring me. And he answered the phone, and I never forget his voice. He said, it was so beautiful here, I forgot to die.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, again, mm-hmm. how the healing happens. And if you have time for one more story.
Oh, yeah.
Because it, this, you see, part of, again, to get back to your life, there's a poem called Miss G, G-E-E, by W.H. Auden. And the poem is about this lonely woman who comes to the doctor's diagnosed with cancer. Now, when I was reading it at night, when the doctor gets home, he's sitting having dinner with his wife, and he turns to her and he says, you know, cancer's a funny thing. Childless women get it when, and men when they retire. It's as if there had to be an outlet for their foiled creative fire.
Oh, wow.
When I read that, again, I felt, yeah, that's what I'm finding, you know, in the office when I say to people, what's happening in your life now? You know, why is it you're sick now?
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't just cancer. I mean, what made you vulnerable now, not a year ago or 5 years ago or next year? And they would always have stories to tell about changes in their life. But what reaction did I get from a doctor once a few years ago when I read that poem?
Mm.
He said, just because it rhymes doesn't make it true.
Oh, wow.
See? He can't accept it. But we have studies now. You see, 20 years go by, and we have studies showing that loneliness affects the genes which control immune function. So
right.
A lonely person is more likely to come down with cancer or the flu. I mean, they're all more vulnerable. And this one gentleman who was a landscaper retired, and he came into my office after living with an ulcer, which the doctor assumed was stress from retirement, but when it didn't heal, showed it was cancer, biopsy. And I said, we need to get you right in the hospital, John. He said, you forgot something. What'd I forget? It's springtime. I'm going to go home, make the world beautiful. So if I die, I live a beautiful world.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of weeks later, he came in and said, okay, I'm ready. We operated. I couldn't cure him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, John, after surgery, I was talking to him. I said, John, I couldn't get all of the cancer out. You need more treatment. You forgot something. I said, what did I forget this time? He said, it's still springtime. I don't have time for your treatment. I'm going to go home, make the world beautiful. So when I die, I leave a beautiful world.
Wow.
6 years later, the nurse handed me his chart. I said, excuse me, Ann, he's dead. Because he never came back to the office. I said, he's dead. We must have two patients with the same name, so
mm-hmm.
get the other chart. And she said, Bernie, open the door. So I opened the door, and there sat John. perfectly well, and he said, oh, I have a hernia from lifting boulders in my landscape business.
Oh, jeez.
He lived to 94.
Wow.
When his wife died, because that's the other part, I really try to let people know that you can, when you get ready to go, you turn the switch off too, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
When you're tired of healing, that the healing, by a better way of saying it, that the true healing will be to leave your body. See?
Right.
So John lived to 94. His wife died. He, you know, let me know. I'm turning off the switch too. And then he went to join her.
Mm-hmm.
And I may use my parents as an example, because my father, his father had tuberculosis, and I'm sure he did as a child, because he had lung surgery and they saw lots of scars and so forth. And he had all kinds of problems and was just tired of his body. You know, it was a struggle just to breathe and stay alive. So he said one day, I need to get out of here. And my mother said, he wants to get out of bed. I said, no, Mom, he wants to get out of his body. He's asking for your permission.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't have trouble. She went in and said, okay, if you need to go, it's all right. And then, you know, he said, okay, you know, we'll die on Sunday. And we got all the family together. And it was an incredibly beautiful experience. I mean, he literally died laughing. I've often written about this because of stories my mother was telling when I asked her, how did you two meet?
Mm-hmm.
And just so you know, my father lost a coin toss and had to take my mother out. So, you know, when the grandchildren and great-grandchildren are listening to these funny stories,
yeah,
my mother's
coin
telling.
Toss.
Yeah, my father died looking wonderful.
Yeah.
When the last child. See, that's the other aspect of consciousness. He doesn't know who's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've let everybody know all over the country. Say, on Thursday, we said, Grandpa's dying on Sunday. And we heard, I'm coming, I'm not coming, I can't come. So we had a list. We knew who's coming. When the last person who said, I'm coming, walked into the room, and my father has no way of knowing who's coming or not.
Oh, wow.
He took his last breath and died.
Oh, my gosh. That is so amazing.
And those are the things that they say make me a believer. So, mm-hmm. you know, when people give their life, I always say, if I had to summarize everything I'm talking about, it's love your life, love your body.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you create a chemistry that does all it can to keep you healthy and alive and heal your wounds and fight disease and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And, you know, one of the things that you said in the book was that in some cases, you know, death is the next stage of treatment, and that there,
yes.
and that your father's story illustrates that perfectly, that he decided that his body didn't serve his purpose anymore, and
right.
so the next stage of treatment was to die, and that it happened so orchestrated that the last loved one that is intending to be there walks in the room, and that's when he leaves. It seems like it was almost, you know, completely orchestrated.
There's a wonderful story by William Saroyan called The Young Man on the Flying Trapeze. He's not the only author who says this, but the young man is dying. He has no money. He can't buy food. He can't get medicine. And he finds a hotel room, and he lies down on the bed to die. And the last three words in the story, you know, as the earth circles away, he becomes dreamless, unalive, perfect.
Mm.
See, there's another author. And that's why I mean this. I tell people, read fiction, read poetry and novels, music, lyrics. The authors have seen the truth, and they're writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the movie Carousel, an angel says to a man who has died, you want to go see your daughter graduate from high school? My daughter's a baby. What are you talking about? That's when he was, you know, shot and killed.
Mm-hmm.
And the angel says, there's no time up here.
Oh,
boom.
Wow.
And I've learned that's true, too. When you're out of your body, there's no time. But you'd say, how did those Rodgers and Hammerstein come up with that line? And, you know, perfect. But when you leave your body, those who are born blind see again. There's a book called Mindsight,
mm-hmm.
when they leave their body. And when I was 4 years old, I always say my life should be a motion picture. I have had incredible experiences. When I was 4 years old, I almost choked to death on a toy that I took apart imitating some men who were working in the house to fix things because they had put things in their mouth. You know, and you didn't have all the automatic tools. And I left my body, and I was, like most kids, upset that your parents will find you dead, but preferred being dead. That may sound crazy to people listening, but when you're a kid and you leave your body, I mean, what better thing could happen? I'm out there, I'm feeling fine, I'm not joking anymore, I'm not in pain, I can see, I'm thinking. You don't stop and analyze it. It's just happening.
Uh-huh.
I mean, today, near-death experiences are something that's being written about, talked about. But back when I was 4 years old, it happened, you know.
Wow, that's remarkable.
And I didn't, yeah, my mother wasn't interested in my wonderful experience. But, you know, so again, I have had so many experiences that my mind stays open.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear this from also from the parents of children. I always say that when people feel safe, that I used to ask my patients, did you have any near-death experiences? No. But when they learned I wasn't normal, see, as a doctor, as I began to change, then they felt safe telling me stories. And even one of my patients was a mystic. And she said, now that I know you're not a normal doctor, I have messages for you.
Wow.
You know, because she sat in a session with other people and said, let's ask something for Dr. Siegel. And she would tell me names, too. So I knew who she was talking about.
Oh, wow.
And their families were always shocked in a pleasant way because I was afraid I was upsetting them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I called somebody and said, I have a message from your husband. But they'd say, oh, that's what he used to say all the time. They were so happy to hear this and make that connection. So, again, you know, our consciousness continues. Our bodies die. The physical part dies. But, again, your consciousness can come back again. See, when you talk about healing, it isn't just the physical.
Right.
If I did terrible things in another life, and I'm conscious now of what I had done, that I had other choices, and I can bring my consciousness back into a new being. You know, a child is born, and I can enter into that child's consciousness and have that child grow up, you see, and become a surgeon and not a killer.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm no longer killing with a knife or a sword. I'm curing with a knife or a sword.
Wow,
you know, the things that I've thought about, I always say, you can come, you know, if things have happened to your family, you can come back and say, I'll join the mafia and everybody will be afraid of my family.
Mm.
Or you could come back and say, I'll be the head of the United Nations and let's make the whole world into a family so this doesn't happen again. I mean, and I think that the higher level of consciousness we reach, then the more beneficial effect it has on the future. You know,
right.
And when you look at the headlines today, we need help.
Right. And so what you're saying is that this process of healing and uncovering your inner wisdom is transcends, you know, the moment at time, and that it can, you know, lead to changes in the culture. It can lead to, you know, changes in your life path in so many other
right.
powerful ways. And so, you know, what I remember from your book about the prescriptions for living was that you basically said, you know, and this interview here is really just about healing, and so that you don't have to have cancer to follow these prescriptions. You should be doing it now,
yeah.
And that the benefits go beyond healing from cancer, but they really could prevent diseases, or they could take your life to a new level, make a contribution creatively that you wouldn't have made otherwise. And so that this is really a path, and that self-healing should pretty much always be a practice.
Yeah, we have to believe in it.
Yeah.
See, there are a lot of people who don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I started groups, support groups, I said in a letter to 100 cancer patients from our office, so it's not getting a letter from a stranger, if you want to live a longer, better life, come to a meeting. And I was expecting hundreds of people because the letter didn't say you can't bring your relatives and friends, because I had told the secretary, say that this is limited to our patients, and she forgot. And a dozen women showed up.
Mm.
I couldn't believe it.
It's hard to believe that.
See, what are they afraid of? Yeah. You say they can heal themselves, but what if they don't? Then
right.
They're a failure. I did it wrong. Mm-hmm. See, I didn't love enough. I didn't this or that enough. I didn't meditate. And that's the part I try to get people beyond. It's not about failing. It's about participating in your life. Take some responsibility. Now, it's hard when your parents abused you. The opposite of love is indifference, rejection, and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You don't grow up with love, it is hard as hell to heal yourself.
Yeah.
You're more likely to be self-destructive and destroy yourself or others in revenge. So you need to learn to love yourself. And I didn't say you have to like yourself or everything you're doing, but love yourself. And then someday you'll come to like yourself, because the love will lead you to make changes in your behavior and everything else. I mean, let me just give you statistics so you know. Harvard students were asked in a study years ago, did your parents love you? If they said yes, about 35 years later, 1 out of 4 had suffered a major illness.
Mm-hmm.
If they said no, 98% had suffered a major illness.
Oh, geez, wow.
And even if dogs, you have a heart attack, study in Australia, go home to a house with a dog. A year later, 5% of the people had died. No dog in the house, 26% of the people had died.
Oh, wow.
See? And marriage, too. You know, it's about relationships.
Uh-huh.
And why women live longer than men. I'm laughing because, again, it's not about hormones. It's about relationships and what's keeping you alive. For the women, I always say, look, don't say I can't die until all the kids are married and out of the house, because one day they will be.
Right.
And then what do you do? Because I meet women who have literally done that.
Uh-huh.
You know, when the kids left home, boom, the next year the cancer comes back and they die.
Uh-huh.
And men who say, I can't work, what's the point of living, when their wife and children are sitting in the office with them.
Wow, okay. That quote
I have heard more than once.
Oh, really?
From men.
Wow. Huh.
And even had a wife call and say her husband committed suicide because a doctor told him he can't work or play tennis or sail his boat anymore.
Mm.
So he went home and just blew his brains out.
Mm.
My comment to the men is no. Tell the doctor to write that on their prescription pad and then give it to your wife so she leaves you alone and you go and do what's fun.
Mm.
Then if my wife asks me to do something, I say, honey, I can't. The doctor told me. So. But, you know, again, it's keeping that sense of humor as part of it. The love and the laughter, what keep you going, what help you heal.
Right.
Again, another statistic. This was done in one of the Scandinavian countries. Cancer patients were told, laugh every few hours for no reason. Just laugh. And the control group was told, if something funny happens, laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Who, of course, had a better survival statistic? Those who laugh for no reason.
Oh, wow. That's
And a recent study that impressed me, they were measuring telomeres. That's a structure at the end of the chromosome. That every time a cell divides, the telomere gets shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So as you age, it gets shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you know, you'd say, okay, it ends and life ends. What they did was divide people into three groups. One had lectures on meditating and lifestyle and so forth, 6 hours of lecture. Another group had 3 months of meetings in which they would meditate and got the lectures and everything else. And then another group had 6 months of coming together, sharing, you know, support group, therapy group, and lectures. Who do you think had the longest telomeres at the end of the study?
The group.
Those who, yeah, the six-month group. Yeah.
Wow.
And
yeah, so, I mean, that's powerful. When you talk about telomeres, I think most of us think that, well, that's, you know, the mind can't affect something as genetically
predicted. Well, this is why
what impressed
me was having an injury,
mm-hmm.
but and literally finding it extremely painful to stand up. So I really couldn't do anything, but I could operate for hours. In other words, I had surgery scheduled. I would go to the hospital.
Uh-huh.
I'd go in the operating room, start operating, and stand there for hours.
Mm.
See? And then when the surgery was over, suddenly, I'd be lying down on the floor for comfort. And the other, I'm an artist, I found if I wanted to feel good, painting always did that for me. I didn't need a backache. But I noticed also I'd start painting, and then I'd look at the clock, and I'd been standing for 3 hours painting a portrait. And as soon as I was done, get over to the sofa and lie down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always saying that to people. Find what makes you lose track of time. Another way, one of our children said, you know, if he had 15 minutes to live, he'd buy a quart of chocolate ice cream. So I say to people, find your chocolate ice cream and live that. Because really, think about it. How can you get older if you never know what time it is?
Right. That is such a beautiful way of saying it.
Yeah.
That kind of find that place where you're in your flow, in your jet stream, and that's probably the best kind of prescription for living.
Right. Yeah, that you're doing something, you're choosing life-enhancing creative activity.
Right.
That you're choosing life when you do it,
mm-hmm.
but it's life-enhancing for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it reminds me of the quote from your book, The Art of Healing. It says, the body is like a TV screen that plays whatever channel you are tuned into.
Right.
And that really reverses, I think, the way many people think about, you know, when you talk about telomeres, I think most of us would assume, well, that's kind of set in stone. You know, it's not like we can really change that. And I think and that quote really exemplifies this idea of healing myself. Well, the way you heal yourself is you change the channel that you're tuned into. And
right.
those examples that you gave about being in the operating room or painting are just a very specific example of that. And I know that when you wrote that in the book, I think you meant it more broadly in terms of, you know, focus on positive images,
right.
focus on positive relationships, but even in a very precision targeted way, do something you love. You've just changed your channel. It's going to affect your body.
Yeah. I mean, it could be working in the garden. Because when I say, what's your chocolate ice cream? You have 15 minutes to live. Some people say, I play golf. Fine. You know, I actually respect them more than, you know, the routine answer you get. I'll call everybody I love and I'll say I love you. Does that sound like fun? No, you know. But when the guy said, I go play golf, I looked at him and he said, yeah, that's my chocolate ice cream.
Right.
And he taught me a lot, you know, and I really respect the people who mention rather bizarre things that they would do if they had only 15 minutes. But it's truly, well, way of saying it is let your heart make up your mind.
Yeah.
So when you get out of your head, and the other is, because you mentioned the art of healing, and while you were talking about the book, I thought of something else. A theme that comes up all the time in myths, fairy tales, etc., is the still pond, the quiet mind. So the ugly duckling knows he's a swan reflected in the still pond. I mean, these are stories. A tiger that I've came across realizes he's not a goat when another tiger takes him over to a still pond because his mother had died and the goats raised him.
Mm.
So he says, you're not a goat, Dumbbell. Look, you're a tiger. And I've heard that over and over again from more people. Bernie, quiet your mind. This is from an animal intuitive friend of mine.
Okay.
Because she said, Bernie, if you're screaming your lost pet's name, you're never going to connect with them. Quiet your mind, and you'll get into the animal's head, you know?
Huh.
And so you hear that theme over and over again, the still pond, the quiet mind. And that's when the healing really happens, the communication happens. And the other is that the communication happens, yes, it can happen in words if you're talking to an animal. I mean, I can hear words in my head, even though it's an animal, what they're telling me. But it's also in images, in pictures. You know, the body speaks to us through dreams.
Right.
Another one of our books, A Book of Miracles. I mean, a lady had a dream in which a woman with dark skin and an accent tells her to have her right breast checked. She has a lump in it.
Mm.
It turns out to be cancer. They tell her the doctor who's going to take care of her will be in a minute. And into the room walks the lady from her dream.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I know those things happen because patients aren't afraid to tell me that I don't care what the mammogram showed. I know, you know, when they're being reassured, oh, it's not cancer. The mammogram looks okay. And they say to me, no, it's not okay. I know from a dream. When I would hear that from patients, I would always biopsy.
Yeah.
And they were right.
Uh-huh.
You know, whether it's a lymph node or a breast, lesion, when they had that intuitive sense that this is not okay, I would listen to them.
Wow. Well, you know, Dr. Siegel, I would really love to talk to you again about your other book, that's the Book of Miracles sometime, but we have to wind up right here. And, you know, the thing that I'm really hearing is that in terms of healing and the art of healing, there's so many different channels that a person can tune into, whether
mm-hmm.
it's their dreams or their intuition or their stilling their mind. I mean, we don't even think of that as a channel, but what you're saying is that may be the channel to tune into
right.
to heal. So thank you so much for your time, and your book is really, really remarkable. Can you tell us where people can find your book or where your website is?
Oh, yeah, the website, BernieSiegelMD.com, and it's S-I-E-G-E-L, BernieSiegelMD.com. And the contact us is me, because I always deal with people directly, you know. So if you get an email with no punctuation or capitals, that's me, because I just speed it up and, you know, send them out. And to look there, and they can order through that too, through the website. I'll give them a discount. There's a don't tell anybody I did this. There's a comment box. Put the number 36 in it, the code number 36, and you'll get a discount if you order any books or CDs or anything else through the website.
Oh, wow. Okay. So there's some secret knowledge here on
right.
making it worth – this interview makes it worth your – save some money here. So, again, I really think so highly of this book.
Thank you, Lara.
Amazed by it. And
yeah, the medical profession needs to wake up to things that have gone on for the last 100 years. I mean, Jung diagnosed a brain tumor from a dream. Nobody tells medical students that. So I hope that, you know, people will read it and give their doctor a copy.
You know, I have to tell you, I was actually thinking some that exact thought. And so, yeah, in terms of the medical profession needing to
right.
change, I think that your presence is such a force for those changes that definitely need to happen. So, again, I'm hoping I can call you back sometime and talk about
right.
miracles with you. But this has been wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Siegel.
Bless you, Lara.
Okay.